Ja, dann möchte ich Sie zum letzten Vortrag in unserer Vortragsreihe Security and Networking begrüßen. Professor Steffen von der Hochschule in Rapperswil wird jetzt über sichere Internettelefonie referieren. Viel Spaß mit Herrn Professor Steffen.
Thank you very much. Who would prefer to hear my talk in English? Und wer würde es... Ah, okay. Because both languages are foreign for me, because I'm from Switzerland. You might hear that. The title of my talk is Secure Internet Telephony. Don't be afraid. I'm not going to talk about StrongSwan, the Linux VPN solution. I did that last year, so I thought I would talk about a quite different topic today. I want to show you how you can secure open source voice over IP software using state-of-the-art cryptography. I'm a professor at the University of Applied Sciences in Rapperswil, and I have brought along a picture from my university. It's the most beautiful campus in Switzerland. It's right on the shores of Lake Zurich. And this is a view of our institute. And also, I want to make you aware of the... of the StrongSwan project. We have a boost this year. It's right in the Bermuda Triangle between Fedora, Wikipedia, and Ubuntu. So we can find us. And we also have a demo of the voice over IP, of the K-phone setup. So if you're interested to see a live example, so you can visit us tomorrow on Saturday. There's also some connection between IPsec and voice over IP. I will shortly speak about it. I found out last year that Siemens has equipped one of its wireless LAN IP phones with a StrongSec IPsec stack, so you can, if you're in a, for example, in a public wireless hotspot, wireless LAN hotspot, you can phone securely at home. But I want to present you other methods, much more efficient methods than IPsec. I've taken an example from the session initiation protocol RFC, where Alice, who is associated with Atlanta.com, with that domain, wants to make a call to Bob, who is with Biloxi.com. And usually, if you have a look at really global internet telephony, where you want to reach just about everybody on the world, then you have to be able to reach someone who is located or registered with another domain. Usually, if you have an in-house solution, then there is one call manager, there's one central registrar where you register. But if you have several different domains, then there are several proxy servers which play a role here. So usually, if Alice is going to set up a call, she delegates the task to find out where Bob is located to her proxy server. So using the session initiation protocol SIP, I think this is not the right one, I take this one. She sends the SIP request to her proxy. The proxy server usually does a DNS lookup, is looking for a service record, and finds out where the proxy server of the second domain is located, and then this SIP request is forwarded to the other proxy server. And because Bob usually, as soon as he switches on his notebook computer, registers with the proxy server, he can be located. So the session initiation takes place. It goes over several hops, minimum one hop. It can also be more than two hops or more than three hops. But as soon as the call is established, then... Yeah, this is not good. So take this one. Then the communication takes place directly because it's much more efficient to send the audio, or if you have a video connection, the video packets directly to the peer. So from a security point of view... this setup makes it much more complex, because if you want to secure this, Then you have to secure both the session setup on a hop-by-hop basis. And as soon as the call is established, you have to secure the audio and or video connection. What are the objectives? I think the most important thing if you are going to set up a call over the internet is authentication. You must put trust into the hops. You certainly heard about phishing. The same can be done with voice over IP because SIP is nearly identical to HTTP. So the clients won't be sure that they are connected to the correct server, that they are not redirected somewhere to Russia or somewhere else. And on the other hand, the proxies, they want to fight off spam or spit, how is it called in the voice over IP world. They want to be sure that only people who are entitled to use this service can connect to the proxy service. I will show you how authentication can be achieved in the session setup. Then the second part, the audio video connection, you usually want confidentiality. I have talked to a lot of people, and I think about 80 or even more, 90-95% of the people, they don't care at all if their calls are transported over the internet in plain text or encrypted. They just don't care. So, you know, anyone can listen in. But as soon as they buy a webcam and they start to transmit pictures over the internet, then they suddenly care. I don't know what people are doing with their webcams. Okay. So this is certainly a topic. Confidentiality, this means encryption. Strong encryption of the multimedia stream. Another topic is data integrity. You could do man-in-the-middle attacks. You could do a denial-of-service attack. You want to be sure where the packets come from. So you would like to have cryptographic checksums on the multimedia packets. This might be not so important with voice calls because you usually recognize who's on the other end. But if you have, for example, you have automated applications like multi-tone dialing, which are mechanically produced, you could do some fantastic things just by faking these signals. Or there are even some people who still use fax. So you might want to protect fax transmissions. I'm first going to talk about the easier part, how to protect the audio or video streams. Another thing, just shortly how a session initiation starts. It's described in the RFC 3261. You have these both the user agents who build up the call, and you have these two proxy servers. The caller sends an invite message. It's an ASCII message to the proxy server. The proxy server forwards to the other proxy as soon as it has found out where it is located. And as a trying message is sent back, so the user knows, or the user nation knows that something is happening. Then the proxy server sends it, forwards it to the destination. And then the phone starts ringing. And this is also signaled back by sending a reply message back that the phone is ringing, and if Bob wants to accept the call, then he takes off, and then that call is established. And an HTTP-like message, an OK message, it's 200 OK sent back. And at last, an acknowledge message is sent, and this already goes directly without taking the way over the proxy servers. This is how a session is set up. And you can also disconnect it, you just start talking, and at the end, either one of the parties can send a bye message, and the session is terminated. So, this is a practical demo. At our university, students of mine have been working with K-Phone. You can, it's a part of the KDE framework. So both users, Alice here on this side and Bob on the other side, they have started up the K-Phone software clients. They have registered with a proxy server. And Alice now wants to call Bob. It starts ringing. So, and Bob just accepts the call by clicking here.
Hello, Bob. Here is Alice.
Okay. And this is transmitted in clear text, in plain text. Everyone can sniff it. Anyone who has access to the nodes where the IP packets are routed through can access these packets. It's very easy in the local area network where you can do RP spoofing, things like that. You just can listen in to any calls. Or, of course, organizations which have a lot of money or have the power can listen in on the routers on the way. How easy it can be done, I want to show here. The more technical-oriented tool is Serial, which you probably all know, which can be used to analyze any kind of IP packets. You see, we have here register, sniffed the conversation. At the beginning, you see the session initiation protocol, the request, then the stated message that it's trying to reach the other end, the ringing message, and at last the 200 OK message and the acknowledge. And then starts the conversation, the media streams. Both sides, it's based on the real-time transfer protocol, and they are transported in UDP datagrams. So, and if you've registered such a conversation, you just select one of these RTP packets, then you have a statistics menu here, and this is something for specialists. You can analyze the jitter of the packets. What interests us is here save payload, and you can save.
Hello, Bob. Here is Alice.
Either one side direction of the conversation or both directions as a voice file. It's an audio file, but it can be converted to a WAV file. And I had a similar talk on Tuesday as part of the telephony summit, and there is some Serial plugin available where you can immediately listen to the conversation. There are also other tools like Oreca, which are a little difficult to install, but which also automatically save the conversation. So it's very easy to eavesdrop on such a call. What can you do against it? How can we secure the media streams? There are standards. And the optimal way to protect media packets, multimedia packets, is secure RTP. It's RFC 3711. I don't want to go into detail, explain all these fields, all these bytes. This is just a typical RTP, multimedia packet, where you have a header with the timestamps, so you can synchronize video and audio, for example. And then you have the speed samples, and these speed samples can be encrypted. Usually it's AES, it's the default cipher, 128 bits of the advanced encryption standard. You are using AES in counter mode as a stream cipher, so the payload doesn't increase due to encryption. If you use IPsec, then usually then a block cipher is applied where you have to use padding, so you have an overhead in the worst case of 15 bytes. Here, no overhead whatsoever. The size of the packet does not increase. If you want data integrity, then you can append a cryptographic checksum, which is computed as a SHA-1 hash over the whole packet and is then hashed together with a secret key. This means that both for encryption and for authentication, you need a symmetrical key. Both ends, or if you're going to make a conference call, all parties involved must be in possession of this symmetrical key. But it's very efficient. Because you don't want to have large packets, the cryptographic checksum is rather small. Standard is 80 bits, it's 10 bytes. But if you are really, if you have a very narrow band channel, like ISDN or I don't know what, some wireless channel, then you can reduce it, go down to 32 bits, it's 4 bytes. This is not cryptographically strong anymore, but usually such calls are short-lived. You are not going to keep that call for years. And so it's a compromise between cryptographical strengths and overhead. So, last year, two of my students, they did a semester project. They took K-Phone, which didn't have any encryption at all, and integrated the secure RTP stack into it. They didn't develop the old software themselves. On SourceForge, you find the libsrtp. I think it's the original code is from Cisco. They donated it. It's a BSD-like license. And they integrated it as a bump in the stack into the K-Phone client. And the client now looks like this. It can be downloaded. It's version 4.2 of K-Phone. It has this additional menu, just a button, enable SRTP. And then you can type in a symmetrical key. And it must be at least 30 characters. That's awful. It's not user-friendly, I know. But it's just the first step. So, and if you put in this master key, and from this master key, all the other keys are derived, encryption keys, authentication keys, for both directions, different keys, then when a call is taking place, and someone wants to listen into the conversation. Sorry? Nothing but noise. Pure white noise. So. And this cryptographically strong. 120 bits AES. And of course, if Bob wants to hear what Alice is talking, then he must type in the same key exactly.
Hello, Bob. Here is Alice.
So. And it works. This is obviously, you can download this version, but it's not scalable. There is only one key available, and you want to talk with dozens of people. So the problem is, how can we distribute the SRTP master key so we can talk in encrypted form with just about everybody without caring about keys, about certificates? But first, I want to summarize some points about securing the media streams. The recommended way of doing it is using secure RTP because it doesn't introduce much latency, it doesn't increase the size, except for a cryptographic checksum if you want it. How can the secret session key be transmitted? Somehow it must reach the other end. You have seen at the beginning, the session initiation protocol is looking for a way to reach the peer on the other side. And there is the session description protocol message, it's a MIME attachment. And there is a field there designated where you could put in this key. And now there is a lot of dispute how this master key is transported. There is one IETF draft, it's called S descriptions. It's favored by Cisco. They say just put in the plain text key and send it to the other way. And how can SIP be protected? Yeah, you can do transport layer security, TLS, on a hop-by-hop basis. So if someone is listening on the internet, then nobody can understand it. But the drawback is, in the notes, the TLS session is terminated, and for the next hop, there is a new session. The authorities are very happy about this, because it enables you to do lawful inspection. This is probably how, this is my opinion, why Cisco is favoring it. So you can offer them to operators and to authorities. This means you must put trust into the servers on the way. But if you are very paranoid, then you would like to have true end-to-end security. You want to exchange a key so that only the people involved have this private key. And this can be done using the multimedia internet keying protocol. It's very similar to IKE, the internet key exchange protocol for IPsec. It has very similarities. And the necessary payload is also transported right embedded into the STP payload. And nobody can listen into it. I had a visit from the Cantonal Police in December. They have a problem with Skype, because they are fighting organized crime. They won't listen in on certain conversations. And with normal mobile phones, it's possible, even in real time, to listen in, because the encryption is weak. But with Skype, you have true end-to-end encryption. You have a Diffie-Hellman key exchange, and nobody can listen in, not even the police. The only one who can listen in is who has to talk with eBay, and probably eBay is selling the keys to the highest bidder. I don't know. This is the only way how you could gather the keys with Skype. And this is a similar thing. You want to have true end-to-end security. Not this one. An alternative would be IPsec. If you have a VPN client installed on your laptop computer and are opening a VPN tunnel anyway, at home or to your office or wherever, then you could also tunnel the voice over IP call through the IPsec tunnel. The drawback is that you have an overhead of about 60 to 80 bytes per RTP packet. And because you have real-time constraints, you usually don't pack more than 10 to 20 milliseconds of speech into a single RTP packet. So these packets are rather small, about 100 bytes, maximum 200 bytes. If you're using an efficient codec, even less. So the overhead could easily reach 50 to 100% if you are using IPsec in tunnel mode. And if you have expensive bandwidth, then half of your money is used for the overhead. Okay, very shortly, how MyKey works. I don't want to go into the details. There are two possibilities how you can exchange a key in a secure way from one end to the other. The classical method is RSA public key encryption. This is what the secure sockets layer is doing in the traditional way. We just take a secret, encrypt it with the public key of the receiver and transmit it over the insecure medium. And the receiver takes the matching private key and can decrypt again this common secret. This is one mode of the MyKey key exchange. The payload looks like this. You see, you have here this secret key here. This is the secret key. It's encrypted with a symmetrical key due to performance reasons. And this envelope key is then encrypted with the public key of the receiver. This still isn't secure enough because there could be a man in the middle who would just exchange the keys. So you have to put a digital signature on this packet. You use your own private key, generate the hash over the whole message, and then encrypt it with your private key. Put a digital signature on it. In order so that the other side can verify your signature, you can optionally send a certificate if you have one, and there is also possibility to transmit the IDs. And then the other side just decrypts the secret and uses message authentication code, cryptographic checksum, in order to prove that he was able to decrypt this message to achieve the key. There's also a symmetrical method using Diffie-Hellman, where you just exchange the public factors together with the digital signature. The other side sends its part of the digital Hellman public factor, and then both can derive a common secret. This can also be done, be extended to several speakers. If you want to have set up a conference call, you just do Diffie-Hellman with 5 or 10 participants. This is also a possibility. And these payloads, they are just during the session setup transmitted to the other end. So this is pure. This is true peer-to-peer security. Now I'm coming to the second part. How can I secure the call setup itself using the SIP protocol? Why would you want to secure it? Many people are afraid of SPIT. It's an acronym for spam over internet telephony. You wake up in the middle of the night at 4 o'clock in the morning because your phone rings. You switch it on and then you hear a short message. Someone trying to sell you Viagra, I don't know what. Okay. This can be done on a large-scale basis using bots. You know, millions of computers on the world are infected by Trojan horses. This could be used to send short commercials to anybody who has a voice over IP client. It could potentially become a big nuisance. As soon as people are using voice over IP on a truly global scale and the ports are open to the internet. How could you protect against spit? One thing is to apply the same methods that you apply against spam, content-based filtering. But it's difficult because you would have to recognize what is spoken in this message. There are already some products available on the market. Many of them just look at the zip headers. And if they see some strange things in the headers, they just reject the call. But I think it would be very difficult to do that. And my personal opinion is that in the long term, we need some kind of secure authentication of all participants who want to talk with each other in the internet. And this must be done in a cryptographically strong way. When the community, the internet telephony community, is going to grow and you will have millions of participants, then you need some kind of directory service. There is still no global directory service that can look up the current location or even the zip URL or of someone you want to call. There is such a service. It's Enum. It's a service of the domain name of the DNS. I have here an example. This is my phone number at the university. You can call me if you want. And this is just the entry which you could put into a DNS server, and then you could log. If you have my phone number and other phone number, you could see if I'm online on the internet. But if anyone could have access to this information, then people would start to scan for the zip URLs. In a similar fashion as today, all websites are scanned for email addresses used for spam, to send spam. So nowadays, the access to the Enum service is controlled. You have to log in into the service. But this is a nuisance. It's not very scalable. If you would have user authentication, then you could open up Enum. And anyone interested that you could be reached could put an entry if he is online, if he can be reached over the internet. Another vulnerability is abuse of the signaling. I have heard several talks. There are, I think, more than a dozen different attacks on the session initiation protocol. You can redirect calls. You can disrupt calls. You can do denial of service. You can do man-in-the-middle attacks. It's open to abuse. And here again, the only effective means against such attacks is strong user authentication. And this could of course be done using TLS, Transport Layer Security, so everyone involved has a digital certificate where you could authenticate. I think this is my personal opinion. Does this some kind of public key infrastructure, and what kind will be, this is open to discussion, will be required in the future, if this thing is going to grow. Well, I've been doing certificate stuff for StrongSwan before for FreeSwan for about 6 years now. So of course, for me, it would be a dream, a global public key infrastructures. If I'm talking to system administrators or managers which are responsible for internet services, for them it's a nightmare because of the cost, because of the work involved. So, of course, the ideal situation would be that all partners involved would have certificates, would have public keys. dieser Part to do is to equip the proxy services certificates. This is what is done in the internet with web servers. If you want to buy something over the internet, I think you type in your credit card number only if there is a TLS connection to it. And you can verify the host name of the server. This could, the same thing could be done with the proxy service. So they could trust each other. Much more desirable would be to equip all the clients with digital identities. And of course, these keys must be stored securely. So if you lose your phone, your key isn't compromised. Some kind of smart card, so you could put it onto a SIM card in a mobile phone. This would be a dream for the one, and for the other ones, it's a nightmare. So what we tried last year, and this was a diploma thesis of two of my students, is to use an alternative method to distribute public keys in a more or less secure way. Of course, there are attacks. I don't know if you are aware of domain keys. Who has heard of domain keys? Yeah. So a couple of you. It's a proposal made by Yahoo. Well, actually, Yahoo has been using it for about a year or a year and a half. Gmail is also using it. They're putting the mail server, the Yahoo and the Gmail mail service, they put a digital signature on each email that is leaving the mail service. Just take a message from someone with a Yahoo or a Gmail account, open all headers, the complete headers, and you will see the digital signature. And of course, the receiving mail server wants to verify the signature and needs the corresponding public key. And the public key is looked up on the domain name server of the sending domain. There's a proposal that's currently an internet draft, and I hope that this year or probably next year there will be an RFC, how you can authenticate email on a global scale. And my idea was, we could use, if this domain key scheme is going to be established in a broad range, we could use these keys also to authenticate voice over IP clients. At least in the domains, you could authenticate the proxy service. But you could also, if you want, authenticate the clients themselves. So how is this done? Alice generates an RSA key pair, a private key, which she's keeping for herself, and the public key, which she puts as a text record on the DNS server of her domain, in this case, atlanta.com. Bob is doing the same. Also creates a key pair and puts it on the DNS server of biloxi.com. I have done it myself. I have several domain names which are hosted by dindns.org. It's just a copy and paste operation, and already you have such a domain key entry. The entry is you are asking for alice.domainkey.thedomain, which is your SIP domain. And if you take the MyKey protocol with the RSA public encryption method, this is what my students did last year. Then Alice generates a master key for secure RTP and then fetches the public key of Bob from the biloxi.com's DNS server and encrypts this secret with the public key and then transmits it via the SIP invite message to the other end. Bob, of course, wants to verify that this MyKey message truly came, was sent by Alice. So Bob, again, does a DNS request. Now, to the DNS server at atlanta.com and gets, as a reply, the domain key record of Alice and can now verify the digital signature. And if it's okay, then Bob will take the private key here and will decrypt the symmetrical key. And both can now communicate securely without anyone able to listen into the conversation. And if you want to see this as a live demo, then just come to our booth tomorrow on Saturday. We can show a demo how this works. It's really very painless. The only thing, copy and paste, text record into your DNS server. How are the keys generated? You can take OpenSSL. OpenSSL generate RSA key. I've taken here 1024-bit key. Then you must extract the public key because this is the part which has to be put on the DNS server. You see here it's base 64 encoded. And then you just take the text between begin public key and end public key and put it into this domain keys record. This is the format of the domain keys format. It's very easy. So, and the KPhone implementation also has the advantage that it has a cache for fetch keys. So the next time the same person is calling, you don't have to fetch the public key anymore. And they are stored under the corresponding zip URL of the partner. This is how the extended here menu looks like. There now is now an additional button. You can either use the symmetric key, but we have seen it's not user-friendly. And in my experience, people are start using weak passwords. If you have the possibility to put in a password, so it's very weak passwords, so better to put on public key encryption. What you need is a private key. This is the path to your private key. If your private key is protected with a symmetrical passphrase, then you can put it in here, type it in here. And then here is also the path to your cache directory. This is everything you need. And this is truly scalable. Summary. Confidentiality of voice over IP calls is guaranteed only if you encrypt them, either using the secure RTP protocol, which is efficient, or if you have already an IPsec tunnel in place, then of course you can use IPsec. TLS doesn't work because TLS requires TCP. Well, OpenVPN might be a solution because OpenVPN uses UDP as a transport medium, so it could work. Actually, I read reports that it works. In commercial or business application, a lot of proprietary solutions are used, standalone solutions. You just buy equipment from Siemens or from Cisco or from Avaya and use the proprietary mechanisms to exchange keys and to encrypt. And I think the biggest obstacle to make voice over IP calls secure is the lacking public key infrastructure, because there's just no global public key infrastructure. And you need it everywhere. You need it for TLS, this is SIP-S. You just have a URL instead of SIP, you have SIP-S. You need certificates. You could also transmit key using S/MIME, means encrypted email, also requires certificates. And IPsec, of course, too, if you have dynamic IP addresses. So, and if you take Skype, I also personally use Skype. I'm aware that it has security, has severe deficiencies because it's a closed source application. There is a central key server where all public keys are deposited. So the PS don't get the public keys directly. They get it from the central key server, which is in control of eBay. But it shows that millions of people can use Skype securely. And I think we could do something similar, but on an open source scale, on an open source basis. And one solution could be domain keys. Of course, DNS system is not secure. It can be hacked. DNS service can be hacked. You could do spoofing, IP spoofing, because DNS is UDP based. Just fire and forget. But of course, there is secure DNS. Well, we have been waiting for secure DNS for many years. I think the Netherlands is the only country which has deployed secure DNS. Oh, okay, sorry. Fine. Yeah, okay. So if you would switch to secure DNS, then I think the public keys would be quite trustworthy. So, coming to an end of my talk, are there any questions? Something that we'd like to know?
own version can use the symmetric key,
yeah,
but not the last.
Yeah, we have. It's so there's another client. It's called Minisip from the Technical University of Stockholm, and they already did some part of the MyKey protocol implementation. They did pre-shared secrets and they did Diffie-Hellman. So my students made a patch to the Minisip library, MyKey library, and they posted it there, but it hasn't been integrated yet. And there is also an additional patch to K-Phone, which we have sent to the K-Phone people, but the K-Phone project is not very active right now. But if you want to try it, you can get the patches from me. Just write an email to me. I also try to put it on a web server so you can download it. And right now I have another students. Now currently two students are working it. They are porting domain keys to Minisip. We decided to not to continue our work with K-Phone, but to integrate this into Minisip because it seems much more mature. The software is much more stable than the K-Phone software. And we are also having close contact with the Minisip people from Stockholm. Okay. Other questions? Yeah? Well, NET doesn't change the contents of an RTP packet. No, because only the body, the headers are not encrypted. And as you've seen, the IP header isn't encrypted too. So if the cryptographic checksum just goes over the time step and the session ID, but not over the IP of the source and destination address. So the cryptographic checksum doesn't get corrupted by NET. Other questions? Yeah? We haven't given much thought to it yet. I think it might be a project for the students as the diploma thesis to have a look how, if you really have a couple of gateways involved, probably you would have to terminate it on the gateway. If you're going, for example, in the PSTN, in the public switch telephone network. I must admit I haven't thought about that yet because there are quite a lot of different cases which you have to think about. I also heard today at the discussion at the booth today that Asterix is also routing the call itself over the proxy service. And I don't know exactly what this means. It probably doesn't have any influence on the encryption. Only if the proxies want to listen in on the conversation. Other questions? Yeah? Yeah, Minisip supports it. This is the classical way you can use Minisip. Minisip, I think, is also available on a Windows platform. And it uses Diffie-Hellman. And in order to establish trust, you can specify a certificate. And, of course, a trusted root certificate authority. This is the classical way to do it. This has been implemented in the Minisip project. Yeah, of course it's less secure. Only I've been working in this field now for about 10 years, and usually I'm discussing with specialists. But normal people, they have problems with certificates. Real problems. Just tell them how to install the keys, how to store the certificate, especially on Windows system, to put it in the right place in the registry. Yeah, it's very difficult. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, of course, because you just transfer the trust to the DNS service, of course. Well, because it's scalable. Well, how would you? There's no root certification authority, a global root certification authority. Some people have make their certificates themselves using OpenSSL. Others have certificates by Salty, VeriSign, Trust Center DE. How are you going to trust all this? There's just no global public. Yeah, of course. But they are usually only the people who are on the service. They have to pay, I don't know how much, 300 euros per year for the certificate, not the clients themselves. They're using... I'm even a SOTI and a CA cert notary. I have the maximum of points. I have a lot of students, so I just giving them certificates. Yeah, no. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, this is what I would this is what I would prefer. Just the experience showed that this is not how it's going to be. There's one chance that all states. There are some countries, I think in Germany, there are also some to introduce a truly national identity card. There has been one for several years in Finland. In Finland, you have 6 million inhabitants and about, I don't know, 100,000 people of them have the electronic card. So it's really not widespread. It's just the early adopters, the freaks, who are using these cards. So it's really not... It might change. I hope that it's going to change. I agree that it would be much more secure. No, because the social event is waiting.
I think it would be better if there are any more questions to discuss personally with Professor.
Yeah.
So I think we should go to the end. Mm-hmm. And I think